Welcome back to Condo Craze and HOAs here on Big Talk 850. I'm Karen Curtis, and I'm here again today, as we are each Sunday at noon, with Scott Shapiro from Glazer & Associates, a law firm practicing community association law throughout Florida. Our listeners know we're here each week to answer all your calls and emails about the issues that make life in your condominium or HOA absolutely crazy from one minute to the next. As always, we would love to get the phone lines going early, answering all of your questions. So give us a call right here in our studio at 877-850-8585. Again, that's 877-850-8585. Or if you prefer to email us your questions, you can do so by visiting the show's website at condocrazeandhoas.com and by clicking on the Email the Show tab.
And even if you don't want to send us an email, you should still visit the show's website at condocrazeandhoas.com, where you can listen to all our past shows, sign up for some of our free seminars, the schedule's out there, and see who the show's sponsors are and visit all of their websites. You have an automatically link to our Facebook page. You can automatically link to our brand new HOA and condo blog, which is www.hoa-condoblog.com. And you can join our email list and get copies of our newsletters and our announcements about the show.
And in case you're wondering why you haven't heard Eric yet, he's bungee jumping today. No, yeah. He went to Chichen Itza to see what happened with the Mayan calendar.
I thought he was skydiving in Liechtenstein. Yeah. Oh, no, I think he's...
It's because it's his first time that he's ever been unable to do the show on a Sunday. In his four-year streak, he comes never missing a live show that has come to an end.
Yeah, well, he'll be back just as soon as the new year rolls around, everybody, so don't worry.
Oh, absolutely.
I'm just holding down the fort for one day here. And Karen, thank you for, helping me out here, because God knows I'd be freaking out if you weren't here.
No problem. We'll get through this with the help of our listeners as well.
Yeah. Okay, well, it's not as impressive as Cal Ripken's streak, but, Eric definitely needed a week off. I just want to wish him and his lovely wife, Mikkel, a happy wedding anniversary. It's their 22nd.
Wow.
Yeah.
Oh, that's what he's doing.
Yeah, and again, Eric will be back, but, we might actually get some answers to your questions right this week now that he's gone.
And if we can't, well, we'll just make it up as we go along. And let's talk about what the great guest we had last week, the CPA Mark Gerstle from the accounting firm of Gerstle, Rosen, and Goldenberg. Mark actually had the phones all lit up from so many callers who had questions about the association's year-end financial responsibilities to their unit owners. And again, we thank Mark for being on the show and thank Gerstle and Rosen and Goldenberg for being such longtime sponsors.
Yeah, I think they've been with us from the very beginning, actually. And we always remind our listeners at the start of the show that any of our shows can be heard on our website. Again, www.condocrazeandhoas.com. And if you're still unsure about the type of report your association needs to prepare for its end-of-the-year financials, or whether or not your budget needs to include reserves, you need to take advantage of the fact that you can always listen again to Mark's advice simply by visiting our website. It was a really great show, and I think we're actually going to be having Mark on again sometime the next year. And, there's just so many questions you can ask him, and he's got all the answers.
Absolutely. And we had the phone lines lit up.
Yeah. As Eric likes to say every week, though, we got some housekeeping that we need to get out of the way here. So I want to remind our listeners that, this is election season right now for condos and HOAs, and it's in full swing. So everybody needs to remember that Florida law provides that members of a condominium board must get certified within 90 days of getting elected to your board. In fact, they can get certified 1 year before getting elected. But you know what? If you haven't been elected yet and you just want to take the course, you should take it, even if you don't get
elected. It's just good to know.
Yeah, it's good stuff to know. One way of getting certified is by taking our Condo Craze and HOA's board member certification course. This is the first course that was written by an attorney, and it was approved by the Florida DBPR.
You say HOAs, they don't have to take it.
No, but we get
a
lot of people.
It's a good idea.
We get a lot of people that come from HOAs also. Eric always, at the beginning of the seminar, always asks people to raise their hands. Who's from a condo? And yeah, 90% of the people are from condos. But we get a lot of people there from HOAs that just want to learn about, quite frankly, all the stuff that they're not getting as Florida citizens from the legislature, because the condos are heavily regulated. And HOAs, let's face it, the statute's paper thin compared to the condo statute.
No DBPR for them.
No. Well, not right now, actually.
Yep.
But Eric's trying to change that.
I know he is. And Eric has now certified 3,300 Floridians who are now eligible to serve on a Florida condominium board of directors. The course is fun. The course is free. He doesn't charge you a cent. And there's food served, and you get to ask questions. And you leave with a summary of everything you learned in a really nice frameable certificate.
Yeah, you know, and this is definitely the perfect time to come and learn about all of your duties as board members, people. You can learn about budgets, reserves, financial reporting, board meeting procedures, and so much more. As we said last time, we even added some information this year about making material alterations to the condo, competitive bidding, and even a little thing on emotional support animals. That's a really big topic, and, you know, I know every time we do a show on that, we get all the calls. So you should come out to the seminar and learn what the actual laws are. So don't miss this really great opportunity. And if any of you want to see some pictures of our past seminars, you can go to our Condo Craze webpage or you can go to our Facebook page. We have tons of pictures. And, you know, you can read some of the comments from people that have attended some of the seminars as well.
Yeah, this emotional support animals. The dog can stay, but the child can't.
Yeah, I mean, that's something Eric's been saying for a long time. And I think you have to take it with tongue in cheek a little bit there. But, yeah, I mean, it's ridiculous that, you know, there are so many protections for people that just, you know, basically say they need the dog. Now, here's the thing. There are a lot of people out there that really need these animals. There was a great article, I think it was in the Palm Beach Post last week, that spoke about, you know, the people that are really in need of service animals and emotional support animals. They talked about veterans coming back from Iraq and Afghanistan that are prescribing them for post-traumatic stress syndrome and things of that nature. And these people that really need the animals find it so much harder to have it accepted
because
by general society
others.
Because there's just so much fraud out there. There's just so much fraud.
You just print the letter off the internet that you need the animal.
that you know what? You know, I think you might be saying that in jest, but that is 100% true.
Wow.
That is 100% true.
Not fair. Okay, and the number of seminars that you may sign up for keeps growing. We'll be back at the Hard Rock in Hollywood. That's on January 24th at 7 p.m. Then we'll be in West Palm Beach on February 27th. That's at 8 a.m. at the PM Expo event in the West Palm Beach Fairgrounds. On March 23rd at 10 a.m., they'll be at the Bonita Springs at the Hyatt Regency. And if you register for either the Hollywood, the West Palm, or the Bonita Springs seminars, just go to the website at www.condocrazenhoas.com. Fill out the form.
Yeah, I mean, you know, the funny thing is Eric for the last month has been traveling all over the state doing these seminars. It seems like every other weekend or Thursday he's in Jacksonville or Orlando or Naples or in Palm Beach or in Miami or back in Hollywood doing it on a Thursday night. And, you know, I'm just glad to see that he's taking some time off this week to, you know, recharge for the new year because I know he's going to be running around the state next year and doing a lot more than he even did in 2012.
Yeah, he's putting the miles on that new van that's all decorated with Condo Craze on it.
Yeah, you know what? He loves doing it too. So
yeah, he does. He does.
You know, if you're gonna learn from somebody that loves teaching. All right, let's start talking about this week about something Eric and I were talking about just before he left. On every Wednesday, the appellate decisions here in Florida come out, and this week the fourth DCA just ruled upon. The third DCA just ruled upon a case that involves the Coronado Condominium Association, which is located in Aventura. A unit owner who lives there actually sued his condominium association and only his condominium association and claimed that while repairs were being made to the property, the condominium property that is, employees of the contractor that was used trespassed into his unit. And get this, they used his bathroom, they caused damage to this unit, and they removed carpeting and plumbing parts. The complaint also alleged misconduct by the licensed community association manager that was contracted by the condominium association.
All right, so if the contractor trespassed into his unit and the manager allegedly caused him damage as well, then why did the owner only sue the association? Should he have also sued the contractor and the manager?
Well, according to the Court of Appeals, you're absolutely right, Karen. In fact, the plaintiff wanted to get punitive damages against the association, and the trial judge allowed it. Now, I'm going to tell everybody right now, it's really tough to get punitive damages in a case of this nature. Well, it's tough to get punitive damages in a case of any nature. But the fact that the trial court judge awarded it surprised me. However, on appeal, the Third District Court of Appeal specifically held that the alleged misconduct of the contractor and the manager does not equate to misconduct of the board of directors, which is who, of course, the association acts through. And therefore, the trial judge was wrong in allowing the plaintiff to demand punitive damages against the association. The court made it clear that for punitive damages to attach, the plaintiff needed to prove bad acts on the part of a controlling officer officer or director or manager. The third DCA did not believe that the manager in the instance was a corporate manager of the condominium association.
All right. Now, I know that you guys always say that at the seminar, that as long as a director or officer doesn't take an act that is deliberately meant to harm someone, then they're pretty much immune from liability for their decisions. I guess this case is just another example of the court refusing to make condo directors personally liable where that director did not intend to cause any harm.
Yeah, I mean, and that's the thing. And I think the court got it absolutely right here. They want to protect not just officers and directors, but when you're talking about punitive damages, you're talking about punishing someone for doing something that they basically knew was wrong. And I'm getting really, really, really informal when I'm talking about this here. But yeah, if you can't basically prove that these people knew exactly what they were doing and it was wrong, then you really shouldn't award punitive damages. And the court, again, they got it right, in my opinion. The idea is that we actually want to encourage people to run for the board and be officers and directors. So in this situation, we certainly don't want to scare them away. And this accomplishes that objective, in my opinion.
And if they deliberately don't fix something that someone asks them to fix, then someone gets hurt, then they can be
sued. Yeah, you're absolutely right, Karen. That's the kind of thing that Eric always talks about at the seminar also. If you get a complaint that, you know, there's a, let's say you have carpeted stairs in a stairwell and the carpet's pulled up and people are almost tripping over it and it gets reported for months and nothing gets done, and then finally somebody trips on it, falls down the stairs, then we're talking about something that's malicious, something that's wanton and negligent. That's something that you need to be protected from. But, you know, the acts of a contractor that you really don't have any direct control over,
right.
That doesn't really rise to the level of something that a board should be responsible for. And I think the court got it absolutely right. Here's another thing. There's another interesting appellate court decision that came out this week. This time it's in the fourth, which is up here in Broward and Palm Beach. And everybody should be actually happy to learn hear about this one because it involves a court ruling against Citizens Insurance Company.
Oh, wow, big.
Yeah, in a lawsuit filed against by a condominium association. In this case, the insurance company denied the condo's claim on the grounds that the condo waited too long, 29 months exactly, before filing a notice of claim.
And what is the difference how long it takes for the association to file a notice of claim? If the condo suffered damages, shouldn't their insurance carrier simply have to pay the claim?
Yeah, well, according to the Fourth District Court of Appeal, the trial court made a mistake in dismissing the condominium's complaint. Instead, the Fourth DCA said that the trial court should have presumed that by breaching the requirements of the policy and reporting the loss timely, the insurance company was in fact damaged. However, the condominium association should have been given the opportunity to rebut that presumption and show the insurance company was not damaged. So finally, a small victory for a condo association over Citizens. This is basically a legal technicality here, but at least it's a victory for the people, I'd like to say. And, hopefully there'll be some more.
All right. And let's take our first break. And when we get back, we'll stick with the court system. We'll find out if judges and lawyers should be friends on Facebook. We'll talk about why we may be losing some of our best and brightest members on the bench. And of course, we'll take all of your calls at 877-850-8585. We'll be right back after this. Welcome back to Condo Craze and HOAs here on Big Talk 850. Again, I'm Karen Curtis with Scott Shapiro from Glazer & Associates. Eric taking a much-deserved day off today. We're holding down the fort here, taking your phone calls at 877-850-8585, 877-850-8585. And by the way, if you have a product or service that would be beneficial to our listeners and want to be a guest on the show, attend our monthly seminars where you meet hundreds of different associations, be listed on the show's website and have a commercial spot during each week's show, you can become a sponsor of the show. Just visit the show's website at condocrazeandhoas.com and send us a quick email.
Yeah, and of course, if you would like to call our show or law firm directly and pick our brains off the air, call Glazer & Associates at 855-4 Condo Craze, and or you can visit the law firm's website at condo-laws.com. Again, that's condolaws-.com. I said that wrong.
Condo dash laws.
And I'm not used to doing so much talking here on the radio. Usually the glaze gets the lion's share of the mic time. But, I'm having fun here in my first week riding solo without the boss. And Karen, again, thank you for helping me.
No problem. And we were talking about the court system before.
Yeah. And there's another article here. Eric left it for me to read before we came on the show. And the Daily Business Review, that's that paper that all the business people and lawyers like to read. They wrote two great articles recently concerning our judiciary. The first one had to do with whether or not a judge should be recused, which is basically kick themselves off a case because the judge is Facebook friends with one of the lawyers in the case.
Oh my God.
Yeah. And here are the facts of this particular issue. A few months ago, there was a criminal case going on here in Broward County, and the defense attorney found out that the prosecutor was listed as a friend of the judge on his Facebook page. Well, the defense attorney asked the judge to recuse himself from the case, but the judge refused. The case was then appealed to Florida's 4th District Court of Appeal, and the court issued a unanimous opinion that said the trial judge should have recused himself from the case simply because the judge was Facebook friends with the prosecutor.
He liked him.
Yeah, I mean, it appears that, they had some sort of relationship other than the one that's in court.
All right, well, the panel of the 4th DCA pointed to a 2009 opinion of the State Judicial Ethics Advisory Committee, which determined that a judge's listing of a lawyer as a friend on the judge's social network page would violate the Florida Code of Judicial Conduct, which states that a judge shall not convey or permit others to convey the impression that they're in a special position to influence the judge. And while the 4th District didn't say that being a friend of the judge on Facebook actually puts you in the position of influence to the judge, the panel did say that it does convey that impression.
Yeah, and I remember growing when I was in law school, we'd learn about ethics and we'd learn about the judicial canons of ethics and things of that nature. It's all about what it looks like from the outside. I mean, I know people have thousands of friends on Facebook. You're not really friends with all the thousands of people on there.
Some of these people are.
Yeah, they're just acquaintances or business associates or whatever. But the whole thing is about appearances. We don't want anyone to appear to, be above reproach when it comes to the court system, because judges are in a very, very special position where they kind of have to be the arbiter of not just disputes but criminal conduct, and they need to be to keep as a clean blank slate as possible when they come to every issue that's put on their table.
Just stay off of Facebook altogether. Facebook causes so many problems for people.
Well, Karen, let me ask you this: if I was representing you in court and I told you the attorney who we were fighting against today is a friend of the judge that we're in front of on Facebook, and then I wasn't, how would you feel about that?
I would not be happy. First of all, I'm like, why are you not a friend? Secondly, I would think that they have an advantage, that the judge knows the attorney, that there's something going on there.
Yeah, and that's exactly what I'm talking about and exactly what the 4th was talking about. They were concerned with the appearance that the attorney, who is a friend of the judge on Facebook, maybe not a real friend, but just, someone that's linked with him, on a social media site, has some kind of advantage, or at the very least can be perceived as having some kind of advantage. And even though it might mean nothing at all, it's how it looks, and it looked bad. And I think the 4th got that right.
Okay.
So for one, I think it's a good decision. And it's not the only law in the state of Florida, but I believe in most other states as well. Although I will say this, just before someone is your friend on Facebook, that doesn't mean they're really your friend at all. I mean, again, as we just said, anybody can be linked with anybody on that thing. But before the invention of Facebook, the term friend used to mean someone you had a close relationship. So today it's more or less an acknowledgement of someone you knew 30 years ago. But still, we gotta at least in the court system, we gotta make it keep things above reproach, at best we can. I mean, I know we don't do a good job of that all the time.
I'm not so picky. If someone asks me my friend, I just confirm it. I don't know. Maybe I should be pickier, but I'm not a judge.
Yeah,
so.
Well, there's a word that I know Eric Glazer doesn't know. It's called no. maybe that's,
I don't want to be mean.
Maybe that's something people need to use on Facebook, but it is what it is.
Okay, well, I understand, though, that another problem with the rule is that lots of attorneys don't go to court. Take law school professors, for example. Why should there be a rule that prohibits judges and law school professors from being friends on a social networking site?
I mean, those are all good questions, and I certainly don't have the answer to it. And, these were things that a lot of judges and lawyers didn't have to think about 15 or 20 years ago. But, I guess that's something that That's something lawyers are going to have to look at in the coming years. All right. Let's move on to another article here. I mentioned this is about we're going into the court system here, and this was in the Daily Business Review. Many of our listeners may not know this, but Florida's Constitution sets 70 as the mandatory retirement age for Florida judges, and it's resulting in many qualified judges being forced to step down from the bench. I guess there's this thought out there that says that you start to lose it a little when you reach 70, but you know, I don't think that's true. Eric turned 45 a few months ago, and he's already lost it. So I don't know if 70 is the magical number here, but there are tons of judges up there that have been doing it for 30 years or more, and they're sharp as tacks. And just because they're turning 70, I personally don't think that's a reason to get rid of him. Even at the office during the week, the guy thinks he's on the radio all the time. But, Eric knows his stuff. And I have a feeling he's going to know his stuff well into his 70s as well.
Yeah, absolutely. And if you think that a judge is healthy, he's the perfect guy you want as judge, the man or woman with all that experience.
Yeah. It's funny is, in our society, our religious leaders in our communities, they get more respect as they get older. You usually seek the advice specifically of an older person because they're supposed to be wiser. So I don't understand why that doesn't apply to judges also. I mean, if they're still mentally fit, yes. There's no medical problems.
If they're still able to drive.
Well, I don't know. I don't know if that should be the standard. But, if they're going to continuing legal education, they're, keeping up with, their practice. And people say, well, you're a judge, you don't practice. But, they're keeping up with the law. Their decisions are, very interesting and on point. And, I don't see why age should be a barrier.
That's right. And there's no mandatory retirement age for surgeons. In fact, a friend of mine is a neurosurgeon. He's 73, and he's still operating.
Oh, well,
he had to take his diplomas off the wall because his patients started doing the math.
Hey, you just hang them a little higher. That's all you have to do.
A little further out of reach.
Yeah.
In this state, I can certainly make the point that if we make judges retire at 70, we should certainly make surgeons retire at 70 as well. A surgeon slips, and it's curtains for the patient. Interestingly enough, there was a great article in the paper the other day that because commercial airline pilots are forced to retire at 65, there's an expected to be a terrible shortage of airline pilots in the years ahead. And now I don't know how our listeners feel, but if I'm up there at 35,000 feet and there's a problem, I have no problem if my captain is a senior citizen with 40 years of experience. And in the case you're wondering, remember Captain Sully, the pilot who landed the U.S. Airways flight on the Hudson?
Oh, yeah.
He turned 62 next month. And if that guy is still in good health 10 years from now, I'll fly on his plane any time.
Well, here's the thing. I mean, there's a lot of professions like airline pilot, like, surgeon that's a good example as well, Karen. Your physical, abilities are going to come into play. Your alertness, your ability, your reflexes.
Hand, yeah.
Yeah.
Not
I mean,
trembling.
The law really is your mind. And if your mind is good and, our Supreme Court of the United States doesn't have any age restrictions. You can serve on that until the day you die. I don't see why down here in Florida we need to have age restrictions, but let us know what your thoughts are. What's your do you think there should be a mandatory retirement age for the court system or should for anything? If you want to give us a call at 877-850-8585, we'll take your question on that or we'll take your question on anything.
Yeah. Emotional support animals or even 55 and over communities. Should you let kids in?
Yeah.
We want to know.
Did you think the world was going to end the other day? I mean, anything. All our lines are free. And if you want to give us a call, we'll take it and we'll try to answer your question. I guess we got a break coming up here,
yep,
Karen.
Right now. We'll be right back after this. The second half hour of Condo Craze and HOAs here on Big Talk 850. Again, I'm Karen Curtis with attorney Scott Shapiro from Glazer & Associates. Eric Glazer has the day off, the first time in 4 years. He deserves it. And if you'd like to be part of our show, it's a little off the cuff today, 877-850-8585, 877-850-8585. And I understand you had an interesting case this week.
Yeah, thanks, Karen. This is a case Eric and I have been working on now for probably the last 6 months or a little bit longer than that. I know Eric likes to mention this Cone v. the Grand case a lot.
He went to the Supreme Court with
it. Yeah, and we didn't do too well in the Supreme Court, 07, but it was a really important case, and it had to do with whether or not the Condominium Act can be applied to a condominium, and subsequent amendments of the act can be applied retroactively to condominiums. And what the court said in that decision for Cone was that only if the condominium's declaration of condominium specifically incorporates future amendments of the law can new laws that get passed subsequent to the deck being recorded
be applied. Oh, is this
applied.
The one that said may?
Yes. And what's funny is the language they call it, Kaufman language is the name of the case had a party named Kaufman in it. And that case basically said that if the declaration has language of the type that is amended from time to time, that's good enough to have a future amendments applied to the condo. Eric and I have a case where it's a case down in Miami, and the condo's deck specifically says it incorporates future amendments of the Condominium Act as it exists from time to time. And essentially, our case is about whether or not as it may exist from time to time means the same thing as amended from time to time. Well, that's the argument we made on Monday. And I kid you not, Garen, we spent about an hour of the judge's time talking about one little sentence and what it means.
As it may.
Yeah. As it may be amended from time to time, does it mean the same thing as it exists from time to time? Our argument was, yes, it does. The other side's argument was, no, it didn't. And this has been going on for months and months and months. We finally had our big hearing. We're waiting on the decision. I think it went well, but you never know. The other side did a really good job making their argument as well.
It reminds me of Bill Clinton. It depends on what the definition of is.
Yeah, well, here is the definition of and came up. But, oh my goodness, it looks like we have a bunch of calls right now. So let me stop talking about my exploits over the weekend. Let's go to our first caller, Jason in Coconut Creek. You're on the air.
Hey, happy holidays to all of you guys.
Oh, thank you very much. You too, Jason.
Question, can a licensed property manager live in, let's say, in a condo, a building? File a complaint up in Tallahassee for a board that has a personal manager who negotiates contracts and does all kind of maintenance for the board, which the individual should be licensed to do so in the first place. And if the manager has already told them that it's inappropriate for that individual to be all that work in the first place, and they're simply not taking his advice.
Yeah, well, you know, here's the thing. If there's an unlicensed individual doing work that requires a license, a CAM license under Florida law, then absolutely anybody can make a complaint about that. There's no restriction against, the funny thing is I actually had a case where someone didn't even live in the condo anymore, but they made complaints about the manager. So they weren't even a unit owner anymore. And the DBPR actually investigated it. And I actually argued that they didn't have standing, which is what you need in court sometimes. You need some sort of relationship to bring a case. But according to the DBPR, and the last time I checked, this was a couple of years ago, but according to the DBPR, any complaint of a violation, they'll investigate. So I guess to answer your question, yes. Even if you're a property manager that knows about somebody who's not a property manager doing property manager work.
He's taking his business away, so of course he's not going to be too happy about it.
Yeah, I mean, is that the answer to your question, Jason?
that's a great answer, and that's the answer which I was exactly looking for.
All right. Thanks for calling. All right. Oh, we got another call. Let's go to Muriel in Boca Raton. Muriel, are you on the air?
Yes. My answer, it's Muriel from Century Village, Boca Raton.
Okay.
My answer to the age limit, does Congress have an age limit?
No, they most certainly do not. We just lost one of our best senators this
Senator
past
Inouye.
Week. Yes, and he was well into his 80s. And if you want a good read, go to the New York Times website and read his obituary. This guy had one heck of a life. And if you want to hear about an American hero.
He won the Congressional Medal of Honor.
Yeah, I'm telling
you. He lost an arm, I know.
Yeah.
All right, I worked until I was 80, but I was not pushed out. I happened to change professions. But until 80, No problem. So I don't understand why there's a limit, except maybe raise the limit to 75 or 78, whatever. The same thing with Social Security. They could make it a couple of years later. If that's going to save our government from spending, I think most people will understand. From 62, it could be 65 and 67, the complete amount. So thank you very much.
All right,
thanks,
Muriel. Have a happy holidays, Muriel. Well, it sounds like Muriel, who was working into her 80s, doesn't see there's any reason why that judges should be forced out when they're 70 here in Florida.
And, I don't either.
You know, I agree with her. And, you know, as for her argument about raising the Social Security age, I think there's actually a lot more technical analysis that goes into that and how much money would actually be saved by raising the age. And I don't know if that really – that's a way we want to go on a –
the government.
Yeah. I don't know if that's the way we want to go here on condo craze and HOAs right now. So instead of talking about Social Security age limits, let's go to Elaine in Miami. Elaine, how are you doing today?
Hi. Fine. Thank you. I'd like to ask a question, please. I've been living in my condo since 1985. I think I'm the only one of the originals, pardon the expression.
Oh, you're excused.
What happened is that all these years I've been paying, giving them 12 checks, mm-hmm. you know, to pay a yearly amount, you know, January through to December, because I'm overseas quite a bit.
Mm-hmm.
So what happened, all of a sudden, they go and say this year, go to the office and give them my checks, the 12 checks. I say, here, never, checks have never bounced, never, I'm one of the very few.
Mm-hmm.
What happens is, all of a sudden, they said they're not accepting checks.
Huh.
Wait, they're not accepting money you're giving them?
The checks that I'm giving from January to December, 12 checks
yeah.
for the same amount.
Yes.
I said a bird in the hand is worth two in the bush. I said I'm overseas, and I said to prove the problem that I'm having, they had an assessment while I was overseas,
uh-huh.
and they said they got a lawyer on me. I said, what the heck is going on?
Because
I got it only 2 months later.
All right.
It was, you know, just passed on. I was when I got back to the condo, they saw how it was addressed, when it was. I said, listen, let me go to my bank, and the bank will pay you. You know, just give me your account number, and it'll be deposited on the first of every month. Like it, instead of me giving you the checks, I'll do it through. That was unacceptable for them also.
Hmm.
Okay, well, let me tell you what's going on. First, Muriel, did they give you a reason why initially they weren't accepting the checks? Was it for not
a... Yes, they said they got a new lawyer, and the lawyer said it was illegal.
It was illegal. Well, this lawyer, it sounds like he doesn't know the law. Here's the situation, Muriel.
Elaine.
Oh, I'm sorry, Elaine. Muriel was in Boca before. I apologize,
right.
Elaine. The law here in the state of Florida, and there's actually a third DCA opinion with respect to this, which actually is down in Miami, that specifically says the condominium association has to accept all checks, all money that's tendered from a unit owner to pay accrued assessments. They cannot reject it, and it needs to be applied pursuant to how the statute says it should be applied, whether there's late fees, attorney's fees, or whatnot. They have to accept the check. And the thinking of this is it'll prevent, you know, an amount from getting so large that it needs to be sought in court. All right. So the first thing that they're doing is wrong is not accepting the money that you're tendering to them.
Even though they're post-dated January, February, March, you know.
Oh, they're post-dated.
Yeah, it's for the whole year. She's going to be abroad overseas.
You know,
so she just
be abroad
drops
over
them off.
A period of 6 months or 7 months.
All right.
And I just wanted to meet, and it's from the first, you know, their payment is from the 1st to the 15th.
Oh.
I always write to the 1st of the month, you know, and I just don't understand. They have secretarial services in the condo. I don't see what the problem is.
Well, okay, now that I understand what's going on here, and I apologize, Muriel. So they're just not willing to accept your checks in advance before you go overseas. They basically want you to mail it to them month after month, and they don't want to have to basically remember that you have a post-dated check there to apply. All right, here's the thing. thing. I mean, you know, is it, would it be such a big deal if they just, you know, tried to help you out because you're out of town? I mean, I don't think so. I'd do it. If I was the association's attorney, I would tell them, you know, just let's do this one little favor.
He says it's illegal.
It's not illegal. I'm not as well versed in 718-116, which is the Florida condominium statute concerning assessments, but I'm not aware of anything that would prevent the association from doing a favor for a unit owner that just holds on to their checks and then applies them as they become due because the unit owner is out of overseas. But because there's nothing against it, there's nothing that says they have to do it either.
She's been doing it, though, for years.
Yeah, I know that. But the fact of the matter is there's nothing that says they have to do it. So if this is basically just going to, you know, make an extra thing for you to do while you're away is to mail your check in, there's nothing in the statute that says they have to, you know, provide this service for you, Elaine. I wish I could give you a better answer, but that sounds like it's a situation.
Thank you very much.
Have a great day.
All right, Kathy, we see you there. We're going to take our final break. And when we come back, we'll continue taking your calls at 877-850-8585. That's 877-850-8585. We'll be right back after this. The final segment of Condo Craze and HOAs here on Big Talk 850. Again, I'm Karen Curtis with attorney Scott Shapiro from Glazer & Associates. Eric Glazer off this week. After 4 years, he finally takes a weekend off.
Yeah, the streak is over.
Woo! And then we're taking your calls at 877-850-8585. 877-850-8585. Let's go to Kathy in Boynton Beach.
Hey, Kathy.
Hi. Well, first of all, thank you so much for the service that you provide us condo owners through this show.
You're very
it's
welcome.
Really a wonderful thing.
You're very welcome.
My question, and happy holidays.
Thank you. You too.
My question has to do with material alterations.
Okay, let's hear it.
3 years ago, we bought this condo, and one of the main features of it that we liked quite a bit was the privacy screen on the back patio, as well as the most gorgeous bougainvillea bushes on the side yard.
Mm-hmm.
And these material alterations were made some 20 years ago.
Okay.
We are now being told by the condo association that, due to white fly, the ficus screening on the back patio needs to be replaced and that we must pay for it.
Okay.
The second thing is they do not want to take care of the side bushes, and my husband began to take care of them, but due to medical reasons last year, he couldn't complete the task, so they proceeded to take out the stakes, etc., and it's just turned into a real mess. So I went to the condo docs to see that in order to make material alterations, they need 75% of the vote from the residents if it's not regards to safety, etc., or in need of repair. But my question is, should we be paying for this?
Who made the material alteration? That's what I need to know that first.
Who planted the bougainvillea?
Yeah.
The former president.
All right. Let's see here. Now, the bougainvillea, the plants, basically, they were planted 20 years ago, and the association's been taking care of them for the last 20 years is what you're telling me?
No. The fellow who died here, who owned this, had taken care of them. But then after his passing, yes, they were being taken care of by the association's gardener.
Yeah, I mean, this is a tricky one here because without looking at your deck, I don't know if these are limited common elements or if they're strictly common elements. And sometimes, but not always, but sometimes plants will not be considered a material alteration. They can be, but not always, depending upon essentially what your declaration says, for that matter.
Maybe if it's a big tree.
Yeah, I mean, you know, there's a dozen different things here that, you know, could come into play, and I'm really uncomfortable speaking to them, you know, over the radio right now without looking at your documents, Kathy. But if you want to give us a call at the office this week, I'm sure somebody would be happy to take your call and talk about your situation with you a little bit more in depth. Our phone number at the office is 855, the number 4, Condo Craze, and we'd be happy to speak with you, Kathy. Or if you can wait a week, you can speak with either me or Eric, because we won't be there this week.
Yeah, there you go.
All right, yeah, just one other question, though.
Sure.
I did pull from the city the landscape plan, which goes back to the 1970-something.
Mm-hmm.
And none of these changes that occurred, whether it was 20 years ago or recently, someone put in, the association allowed them to put in a patio.
Mm-hmm.
And it just seems so convoluted to me. How can they justify allowing a patio to be put in, which I consider a material alteration, and then, you know...
Yeah,
I mean, I don't know.
It's a pretty in-depth conversation. I mean, I can just tell you really briefly that there's a equitable defense called selective enforcement, which applies to, you know, associations trying to stop people from, you know, making alterations to their units. And it basically we actually did an entire trial on this. It was actually my first trial. And essentially what courts hold is that even though someone did something that is a complete catastrophe or as much of an alteration to the unit as could possibly be, if it's not the same exact thing that the association's going after you for, it's not selective enforcement. So
it doesn't apply.
Yeah, it doesn't apply. But again, Gail, I mean, excuse me, Kathy, I apologize. Your situation is a little bit more in depth than we could tackle in the next couple of minutes. And we had Gail on the line.
Sorry, Gail.
And we're running out of time here. But Gail, why don't you give us a call next week or give us an email, and we'd be happy to answer any question that you have. Karen, how did I do?
You did great. I thought it was an awesome show. We had lots of calls,
yeah.
Covered a lot of ground. And next week, Eric will be back.
Yeah, maybe I can get my own spinoff, the Co-op Hour with Scott Shapiro. I don't know about that. All right,
happy
everybody.
Holidays.
Yeah, happy holidays, everybody. Take care.